Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to PodNuts Daily, episode number 436, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Hallisch. I'm joined today by Ernest Garner from NLUcomputers.com. Welcome to the show, Ernest.
Hey, Jeff. How's it going?
It is going excellent. Are you ready to talk some tech?
I am.
Very cool. Why don't you go ahead and start off and talk about basically how you got started in computer repair. And, you know, tell us a little bit about your business.
Well, I've always kind of been a little bit of a computer nerd. So I'd say probably 12 years old, I built my first computer. It was a 286.
Oh, nice.
With 2 mega RAM and a 40 megabyte hard drive. And I eventually ended up getting on the beta for Windows 95. And just really kind of enjoyed it, and just pushing those old computers to the limit of what they could do, and kind of just fell into it. You know, eventually people were asking me to build computers for them. At the time, computers were very expensive.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
I mean, just building a computer here and there, and then just ended up starting a shop.
Wow. Okay. So yeah, you go way back to, you know, really, I would say pretty close to the beginnings of the modern PC anyways. 286. I came in, to the modern PCs, probably, Pentium 2, 400 megahertz, you know, 64 sure. megs of RAM, all that kind of stuff. Windows 98. So, you know, I'd seen Windows 3.1, didn't really understand it, but, you know, once I got to 98, I started rooting around in there, and same thing. I found it very interesting. So that's kind of cool.
I even remember IBM's OS Warp or whatever it was called.
Okay.
Their old OS they tried to make way back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember. There's some history there with Microsoft and OS 2 and a lot of different things that in the field that, you know, there's kind of some cross-platforming, it seems like, between these platforms. So
it was a race to, get the multimedia OS out.
Now back in the day when you had that 286, I mean, were you still able to build those like we build them today?
You know, it was quite a bit different. Back then you would get your big magazine, it was like Computer World or whatever it was called, the big thick magazine, and you'd go through and you'd find the best deal of, you know, hard drive, and you'd find the best deal you could find on a motherboard and piece it all together bit by bit. And they were just so expensive. I mean, I remember the first big hard drive I bought was 850 megabyte. And I want to say that was probably $350 when I bought it.
850 megabytes.
Everything cost a fortune.
Right.
And every little part. So you took your time piecing it together. Nowadays, you go on, you know, Newegg or whatever, and you throw it together in 5 minutes. But back then, you would definitely do your research and try to find the best deal.
You know, it's funny you mention that, because I've been looking to replace my bench computer, which is where I, you know, recover hard drives and different things. And I've got an older AMD quad core. It's a 3 gigahertz. I can't remember which series it exactly is. But one of the things I wanted to do in a couple of my systems is actually get rid of the video card. So I wanted to do the on-chip video card. And I was looking at a processor. I think the processor, 8 gigs of RAM, and a motherboard. And these were all, you know, fairly decent stuff. You're looking at $250. And it was like a 3.7 gigahertz processor, quad core, you know, $250 for just those three components. You know, you throw a case in for what, you know, $40, $50 for a decent case. you know, a lot of the other stuff I have lying around. So it's not, you know, power, you know, good power supplies and stuff like that. But I mean, it's so cheap nowadays to throw things together.
Yeah. Nowadays, the most expensive part you're going to have to buy is the operating system.
Well, I would have said the video card myself, but.
Well, it depends on what kind of computer you're building, but yeah.
Yes. Full disclosure, I'm a gamer and yeah, I usually buy the $400-$600 video cards. I don't know why, because to be honest with you, I really don't have that much time to play games anymore, but I still build them that way.
Sure.
So yeah, so there's, wow. So $286, $350 for a, you know, 850 megabyte hard drive. That's unbelievable. And nowadays, yeah, you can build a computer. I mean, you can build a decent computer, all parts included, you know, for $450. Yeah. And usually, and then you throw an operating system on there. You know, I mean, for an OEM version, they're $100 normally. Nowadays, you know, it seems like everybody's going to probably be moving, you know, their systems, Windows 7 and higher to Windows 10, especially for the residential. You know, I don't know about the businesses, probably not so much. But
yeah, I'm curious how smooth that's going to go.
It's not. Let's just face it. It's not.
Yeah. So out of curiosity, what have you been telling your customers as far as, I'm sure you've gotten the call, should I upgrade?
My customers really have not noticed yet. So I really haven't said anything. And, I'm waiting for the call where they go, hey, you know, what do I need to do? And, you know, what I'm going to do is, and I probably need to send out a newsletter to my customer base and let them know, hey, this is, you know, this is what's showing up. This is what's going to happen. And really, if you do an upgrade, it may work. It may not.
I guess that's what worries me.
Sure.
Is we don't know how smooth this is going to go. I mean, it could go just perfect, or else it could be a disaster, and we have no idea. I mean, I've installed Windows 10, but we don't know how this upgrade is going to be exactly.
Well, I personally, from operating system to operating system, I do not believe in upgrades. I think it's foolhardy at best, and you know, your mileage may vary. Maybe it goes smooth. I've just never even,
right,
even in the Android system, you know, on your smartphones and stuff like that, you still want to wipe it. You want to, you know, you want to start from scratch. You just get a better base doing it that way. So I'm going to let my customers know that, you know, what we can do is we'll back all your data up. We'll actually, you know, we'll get an ISO of the program. They don't need to know that, but, and we're going to do a fresh install and get you all set back up. I think here's the biggest thing that we're going to find nowadays is that, and the things that I'm running into is the customer login. So what I've been instructing my customers since Windows 8 has been out is basically once I get them set up on their new computer, I will require them, well, not require, but I ask them if they want to make a Microsoft account. Because sure, quite honestly, what we're finding out is there's some things that you can't do if you don't have that Microsoft account.
Right.
So here's the problem. You know, back in the day, when you just had a local account on a machine, you could break into that account all day long.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was very easy to do. I was, you know, people would forget their passwords. I do it all the time. It's not a big deal. Nowadays, you've actually got to call the customer. They've either got to give you their email address, or, you know, you've got to send them some sort of text depending on how they had set it up, if they set it up with their phone number on there, some sort of dual authentication. And the other thing is, you know, setting up these new computers, even if I have all that information, because I've set it up right, I've set it up where the customer's phone number comes up or they have their secondary email address, and I've got to send it to that email address in order to dual authenticate a new computer setup. And sometimes you're in the middle, you're calling the customer and going, hey, I need you to give me this code, you know?
Right.
And that in itself to me is the pain, you know, at this point. I'm not having to call Microsoft. I'm not having to, you know, type a number in online and have them send me another number back to authenticate that version of Windows on that particular machine. You know, so I think things are changing a little bit when it comes to some of that stuff.
The hard part is when you get customers, you know, whenever it comes to reinstalling an operating system, it's not bad because you can always take that hard drive and put it in a different computer, and Windows will allow you to get to those files without having that password.
True. Yeah, that's a good point.
The hard part is when you're trying to do software repairs and they don't know their password. And I get that more often than you would think should be possible.
Okay.
I get people who say, this has been broken for a month. And I say, well, do you know what your password is? No. It's like, well, it's a Microsoft account. So we've got to go through and I have to walk through the, you know, I forgot my password steps on Microsoft with them. And that's always a pain. Like you said, with Windows 7, it was so nice because even if they bring it in and they forget to give me their password, it was quicker for me to just blow the password away than it was to call them and try to get them to remember their password.
Exactly, yes.
So that's the hard part. Most of the time when I'm setting up a computer, I set it up with a local account, and then I leave that option to them to set up the Microsoft account.
Yeah, see, I was doing that, and then what was happening is people were forgetting. They would set it up, and then they'd forget their password, and it became this big, and they didn't know what email address they put in. They didn't know what phone number, and they were just, it was a lot of confusion, and I'm just like, you know what? Maybe there's a certain customer base out there that can handle this, but, you know, especially for, you know, sometimes, you know, the older crowd a little bit, they kind of want to, they're like, I don't know, I just want it to work. And, you know, the other thing that Microsoft did was they changed it so you don't have to use your password to get in all the time now. Now you can use a PIN code.
Or right, even on, which I actually like that a lot.
I do too, personally, for myself, but not for my customers. I would rather them put in their password every time so that they're not forgetting what their password is.
Now, do you actually put the password, like set them up with the password?
Usually, and it'll be usually some variation of a password as long as it's a pretty secure password that they're already using on something else.
Sure.
Like, I might add some capital letters because a lot of times on some of these older email systems, you have a lot of lowercase stuff that was okay back in the day, and people are still getting away with that. Some you don't have any numbers on still. So I might, you know, I'll take their password, add a variation. I make, you know, make a note of it and I'll write it down for them, let them know what it is. You know, and that's the other thing too, is documentation. It's like I don't really want anything to do with my customer's computer, but when I'm working on them on a regular basis, it's easier for me to have that information. And most, they don't, if they trust you, they don't really care. They're like, whatever, can you fix my stuff? You know, last thing I want to do is sit around and look at somebody's email or whatever. I don't care. It's like, whatever. So it's, you know, now a lot of people say they, you know, they don't want to have anything to do with that stuff. They don't want to keep it, you know, documented, but it I guess it all depends. You know, if you have a regular customer that you're comfortable with, they're comfortable with you. I don't find anything wrong with that. Even new customers, though, they come in and they go, they just want their machine fixed, right? They want it to work.
Right. They don't care if you know all their passwords.
No.
And whatever.
And quite honestly, I mean, if anybody's ever seen any of these, you know, man on the street things where they go and they talk to people about their passwords and how secure their passwords are. And then they, you know, they basically, you know, socially engineer the questions to get their password out of them without them even knowing. I mean, it's easy to do if somebody really wanted to do it, but that's not what I'm in the business for. I'm just in the business to fix their problem, get them back up and running so they can continue to do what they do on a regular basis.
Well, so I get customers every once in a while, like, are you going to look at all my pictures and videos? It's like, no,
I don't care. Have time for that.
Exactly. Nope. I really don't want to look at your pictures and videos. Don't care.
Yeah, and you know, and there's so much liability when it comes to some of that stuff, you know. I'm not going to charge rock bottom prices, so my customer base, you know, pretty much for the most part seems to be on the up and up now versus when I was charging really inexpensive. You know, I would see pirated copies of Windows and, you know, just some interesting things that's like, "Oh, I don't want to have anything to do with this." You know, or this person. So
yeah, I had somebody bring Windows 7 Ultimate that was clearly hacked the other day, and I just I really hate working on those because I am not going. I told him, you know, let's just reload this and put a legit version of Windows on it. I mean, I don't understand why people feel the need to do that.
Well, what's funny is I said, okay, so you're not, you know, it keeps coming up saying you're not getting any patches because this is not a legitimate copy. I said, but you've got a sticker on the bottom that says Vista. I said, this has still got a couple more years on it. There's nothing wrong with that. Let's just install that and we'll get you all updated and everything. You'll be good to go. And then, you know, some of these hardware problems and stuff you're having will probably go away. You know, but right. People are like, oh, well, no, I just want the Windows 7. Really? So what's the difference? Would you even know the difference? You know, that type of thing. Or, you know, I mean, really the biggest thing between Vista and 7, in my opinion, was Vista just took a lot of hardware to run it properly. You need more right. RAM than what, you know, than what you normally needed. You needed, you know, a decent processor, those types of things.
And I guess in my experience, Windows 8 is even more so. It takes seems to take less hardware.
It does. To run it well. And so does in Windows 10 is supposed to take even less than that. You're in legitimately, it seems like you're going to be able to run these systems on much less hardware than we were used to in the past.
Yeah. Yeah. The amount of power consumption that a, you know, decent computer should take with Windows 10 should be less.
Yeah,
it'll be neat to see what, you know, it's incredible looking back a couple of years, you know, seeing now that we have Windows 8 running on these little bitty tablets where, you know, 5 years ago, that was just a dream.
Well, you know, what's funny, though, it's one of those things where I look at, you know, I look at some of my machines that are similar. I've got Windows 8 on, you know, on my production machine. I've got Windows 7 on my bench machine and, you know, some other things. And it's amazing how much smoother Windows 8.1 actually runs versus 7. When I'm on 7, I feel like it's such, and now I'm not just talking hardware, but I feel like the operating system itself is such a slug. It just, it's hilarious. And I'm like,
yeah, so let me ask you this, Jeff. Whenever Windows 8 came out, were you a Windows 8 hater?
No.
No?
No. I wasn't, but I never used the Metro style apps.
Yeah.
See, that
turned a lot of people off.
And so I downloaded Stardate when I first got Windows 8, right? And Windows 8, as far as an operating system, I was, from day one, I was booting right into the desktop, and I was doing all the things that I did on my Windows 7 machine, from, you know, editing to playing games, no problems whatsoever. So for me, now I will tell you, once they did the update to Windows 8.1 through the store was horrible, but once that update was there, everything, all the controls and everything, you know, like taking a little window on the left-hand corner, I almost can't stand it nowadays when people have Stardate or Classic Shell loaded in their systems, because I can't right-click on my icon and get to all the controls that any technician would want to get to. That's so much faster than sitting there trying to root around and find that stuff.
Yeah, I hear you.
So to me, it's,
if you're running with a single screen, I think even in those, you should be able to run all the way to the bottom left corner, and you should be able to right click and still get to it.
I'll have to try
trying it on my machine now, but I've got like four screens on this, so
gotcha.
I get to the bottom corner.
Yeah, now on my machine it does, because I don't use Classic Shell or Stardate or anything like that anymore. I just use it. To me, it's much quicker for me to hit my Windows key and click the big icon that I can barely see in my, you know, in the old start menu from Windows 7. You know, so it's one of those things where, to me, it's just much more efficient. I got one hand on the mouse, one hand on the keyboard. I hit my Windows key. I click on the app I want to launch. Boom, done.
Yeah, in reality, I mean, Windows 8 is pretty slick. Once you get used to it, it runs really, really well.
Again, I still don't really use the Metro style apps. I just don't really have a need for them.
I don't think anybody does.
I mean, when I podcast on Sunday, so I can see the clock, because, you know, there's no clock widget that you can put on your desktop anymore. I use one of the Windows 8 or the Windows Store clocks, so I can have it on a quarter of my computer screen, so I can see it better. That's about the only thing I use from there. So anyways, let's go back to, now that we've talked about Windows 8 and all the haters out there. So you started in a store. Now, how long have you been working? And you said you work out of a brick and mortar store. How long have you been working in that store?
I do. So about 11 and a half years ago, I decided to open up a shop, which at the time was basically just a little office.
Okay.
And it was just basically a place for me to repair computers and not have to be at home. The problem I was noticing is when you're at home, I tended to work at all hours of the night, all the time, and that's all I did. So I needed a place to where I could kind of separate work from home.
That's a great tip right there, yes.
And once I did that and I kind of set my own hours, I set, you know, I'm going to be here, you know, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. or whatever, then I stuck to that, and it makes the wife a lot happier.
Absolutely. No, that makes that makes more sense to basically separate those. That's good.
Yeah. So, and then basically the store next to me ended up going out of business, so I expanded into there. And then the store behind me went out of business, so I expanded into there. And over the years, I basically became a full-fledged computer store.
Nice. Now, so what types of things do you do in your shop?
I do not build computers anymore.
Okay.
I used to build computers for people, custom machines. I just wasn't seeing the return that I wanted for the amount of time it took.
Okay.
So I sell machines. I keep some machines on hand, you know, Dell machines, or I keep some HP and Lenovo machines on hand. And basically, if somebody wants something in particular, I will order it for them.
Okay.
But I've got, through the years, I've basically taken every little thing that I do and tried to make it as efficient as possible. I think that's kind of key whenever you are basically, you know, you're trying to make a living and you can't just give yourself a raise without having more income.
Right.
So you basically have to kind of say, okay, how can I make more money doing the things I'm already doing, or how can I work on more machines in the same amount of time.
Right.
So I've basically become as efficient as I possibly can to get as many machines in here and out of here in the same amount of time that it was taking me.
Very good. Now how are you doing that?
So there's the tools. I know you've talked about D7 in the past. D7 is amazing. It takes a little bit of configuring to get it set up right.
Right.
But once you get it set up right, it works amazing, and it will save you hundreds of hours over the course of a year. It's a subscription now. It used to be a lifetime, but it is a subscription, but it's totally worth it. So another thing I did is I cut out all residential service calls.
Okay.
And I know it's kind of controversial, but the way I saw it is I can only work on one machine at a time when I'm at somebody's house.
Right.
So I can only make however much I'm charging per hour when I'm on site at a customer's house.
Right.
Whereas when I'm here, I can work on three or four machines at a time and
absolutely
have income from those machines. So I just, I don't like going to people's houses either.
I'm with you there, man.
I mean, you go to people's houses and they've got 400 cats or whatever the situation is. I just dreaded it. So you got to make it so it's enjoyable. I mean, if it's something that you just hate doing, then you're in the wrong business.
Well, and I think, you know, I mean, depending on how many employees you have or whatever, you can only do so many things, right? So if you're in a shop and you're running that shop, to actually go out on site to residential homes is going to be much more difficult and probably not worth the time, because people can really come to you, right?
Right. That's the other thing I did over the years. Years ago, I used to have a couple employees. Now I'm by myself. And I kind of got tired of training people just for them to go and do something else.
Right.
I mean, there's so much knowledge it takes to do this job properly. I mean, it takes months and months to train somebody. And I mean, there again, I just figured if there's a way I can take the jobs that they were doing, and if I can do those in the same amount of time, then that's more money that I can take home.
Sure.
And like I said, D7, I got a whole mess of hookups where I can set up a whole bunch of machines, and they all kind of filter into one little pod where I've got all my screens and all my keyboards and mice, and it works out really well.
Now, when you have all that stuff set up, do you use like KVM switches, or do you do separate mice and keyboard for each setup?
You know, I used to have a KVM setup. The problem I was running into was I would switch to a computer and work on it, and I would forget about you know, the computer on number one. And then I would work on 7, 8, 9 for a while. And I just ended up basically right now I've got, you know, like I said, just a mess of monitors, and I've got wireless keyboards and mice that go to each one of those monitors. And that seems to work the most efficient for me.
Yeah, that's good, because I used to do the same thing. And I'll tell you, you know, even so, you know, wireless keyboards can be, you know, sometimes a little bit more pricey than some of the other ones. And I would go to like a Micro Center. You can get a keyboard and mouse for like $5, and they're USB. They're cheap as all get out, but they work. And one of the other things I always did was I always kept a PS2 mouse and keyboard around, because in some of the older systems, you couldn't get to any of the keyboard commands when you were starting the system up, because for whatever reason, it wanted to see that keyboard in the PS2 slot. It wouldn't do it with a USB. So
I got to tell you this, Jeff. Customer called up the other day, said that he was having trouble getting his computer to run or whatever. He ended up bringing it in, and it was old enough to where it had an AT keyboard port. And I had to dig around for probably 15 minutes to try to find my AT to PS2 converter just so I could get a keyboard on this thing so it could boot.
Wow.
But, you know, some people, they've got their computer, they like it the way it is, and that's fine.
Well, you know, it's funny, all the different adapters and things you use, because, you know, some of these, like, for instance, somebody brought in an all-in-one an all-in-one computer to me, and the screen was cracked, and you had a hard time seeing the image and stuff. It was really in a bad spot. But I was doing another repair on it. They were going to replace the screen, whatever. So I said, no problem. You know, I can plug this into, you know, an external monitor. Oh, no, you can't. Not unless you have a USB to VGA adapter that's basically an external video card to get signal over to an external monitor. I'm like going, you know, they're putting less and less ports on these things and, you know, trying to make them simple. But when
they're
you go
to
repair
them as cheap as possible.
Exactly. But it makes it a little rougher on us.
Yeah. I get customers that will come in and they'll be like, you know, my last computer lasted 10 years.
Yeah.
No, this one only lasted 4. And I said, well, you probably paid, you know, $2,000 for that 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and now they're $400. So.
Well, in reality, you know what? And I've said this often. Most people, you really shouldn't be keeping your computer past 5 years. I mean, it's a dog at that point. It's not worth anything. It's just, you know, it's slow. There's so many problems, and you've got these computers, especially laptops, that are heating up, cooling down, and all these parts are expanding, contracting, and they just get old and brittle after a while. And it's like, why would you, I mean, really, when you can go spend a few hundred dollars, you know, $400 or $500, get a decent laptop, I don't see what the problem is. I mean, I know nobody wants to spend the money on that stuff, but the reality is, if it's something that you use on a regular basis, why not? You know, how many people are online, you know, doing whatever they want to do, whether it's Facebook, answering emails, whatever. If, you know, if you don't want that, I mean, think about what you're going to spend on a tablet. I mean, unless it's a Kindle Fire, you know, which you can get for $100, $130, you know, you're going to spend on a, you know, an iPad or a Samsung Galaxy 10.1, you're going to spend, you know, $400 or $500 easily on those things. And, yeah. You know, there's just a cost to computing, I think. And it's like, if it's not something you want to do, that's fine. But I think most people enjoy it enough that it's like, you know what? 5 years is a lot to get out of a $500 computer, in my opinion.
Right. Yeah. And that's another thing, you know, for anybody thinking about starting their own computer business, or, you know, definitely have some policies that you've thought of to tell people. And like one of mine is, if it's going to cost 40% or more the cost of a new one, recommend them buying a new one.
Okay. That's a good number to have. Because the way I do it right now is I ask them, how old's the computer? And if it's close to the 4 or 5 year mark, and I go, okay, the cost for, let's say they need a motherboard replacement or whatever, something else high end, $200, $250, whatever it is. parts and labor. You know, I tell them, I said, well, we can spend this. I said, or you can add a couple more $100 to what you're going to, you know, spend with me and basically get you a new computer, you know?
Right. You also don't want people to spend more than it's worth.
No, but you know what's funny? I can't explain it. Can't figure it out to save my life. There are people that will pay $300, $350 for a computer that's 4 years old and they want to replace the motherboard on it. And, you know, lo and behold, it's like 6 months later, something else goes bad. But some people are just used to some of their devices. I don't know.
Yeah. I noticed that a lot with laptops, where people will bring them in and they're stuck on that laptop. They want that laptop working again. And, you know, some of these laptop motherboards are very expensive.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know,
one gal who ended up spending like $550 getting her old i7 up and running.
Oh.
And it just made me cringe, because why would you want to spend that much money?
Right, exactly. Oh, wow. Yeah. So, yeah, I think a lot of times, too, I'll tell people, I said, you know, you got to just figure out what it is you want to do. I had a lady that basically went over there, checked her computer out. It was a desktop, and the hard drive was bad. And I'm like, it's going to be $225. And by the time you get a hard drive and, you know, we reinstall the operating system, move all your data over, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's like, you know, what do you want to do? And she's like, well, I'd kind of like to get a laptop. And she saw a sale bill from Dell for, you know, a laptop for $198. I'm like, well, let me, you know, it had no specs on it or whatever. It was something she had on her iPhone. And I'm like, you know, so I went to Amazon and I just said, okay, and found a decent laptop for, you know, $350-ish. And I said, here's a decent bang for the buck. This will get you through. I said, and I explained to her the difference. I said, some of these, you know, laptops that are cheaper are made of a lot more plastic. You drop them on the ground, a lot of times they'll shatter. So you need to get, if you want to spend a little bit more money, you're going to have a little bit, you know, heavier plastic or even some metal and stuff in there that, you know, keeps it a little safer. You know, 'cause really the inside components are pretty much the same. If you're getting an i5 or an i3 or, you know, dual core, whatever, there's not too much differences. You got USB ports, you know, some have USB 3, you know, you might have your HDMI, you know, not a whole lot of HDMI 3, you know, VGA and DVI ports on, you know, I don't even know if they have a whole lot of DVI ports on there, but they're cutting a lot of that stuff out and just making it very simplistic to be able to do what you need to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I try to steer anybody away from the Celerons, the dual cores, the AMD mm-hmm. Visions. I usually try to tell people to get at least an i3.
Yeah. Yep. No, I do the same thing. Except I tell you, I was looking at some desktop stuff, and I was looking at some of the AMD Kaveri processors with the the A10s with the a little bit nicer, you know, GPUs on them. And just to get a simpler system with less moving parts, and like I said, get away from the video cards on some of my bench systems. But yeah, I mean, that's, you know, personal preference, I guess, or, you know, for what I need it for. I don't need it, for a daily driver. It's either a bench computer or a Skype computer or whatever. Very simplistic needs.
Yeah.
So you've been in your brick and mortar for 11 and a half years. And, obviously you probably get a lot of foot traffic coming in. Are you in a location where there is a lot of foot traffic, or?
Well, I'm on the main street, but this town's only got 4,000 people in it.
Okay.
So, it's mostly kind of a rural town. It's in Wahpeton, North Dakota. So it's in the middle of nowhere.
Okay.
It's mostly farmers and old people. And students.
Okay.
But it's quiet and I get enough traffic to keep me going. So,
yeah, that's great. I mean, especially to have a, you know, brick and mortar in an area like that. And, obviously when you take care of your customers, though, they're always going to come back to, that person. So we talked about, you do virus removals, obviously, you know, the things like that, a lot of automation in your business. And so, I mean, obviously residential people come in and drop their computers off, but you don't actually go on site anymore.
Not for residential. Okay. I still have contracts with businesses, but there again, I tried to see, you know, where am I losing money? Where am I spending my most time? And how can I fix that? So I switched most of my accounts to almost 100% remote.
Okay.
So I can sit and remote into, you know, four or five computers at a time and, you know, do backups or whatever I'm doing at the time. And it's much more efficient doing that.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, that's an added cost. I mean, what remote system are you using?
I use Instant House Call.
Instant House Call.
Yep.
I'm not sure how their pay structure works, but
it's like $49 a month for, you know, unlimited access, you know, all that kind of stuff.
I've used a bunch of them over the years. I was using LogMeIn for a while, and now I'm using TeamViewer, and I'm pretty happy with it.
Okay.
And it's more like a one-time cost. I think it was like $800 or something like that. But then you don't have to pay for it again for a while.
Gotcha. Okay.
Until they upgrade it.
Yeah, exactly. No, one of the things, I mean, as far as I've used a lot, I've used TeamViewer and LogMeIn and all those different ones. I personally, for myself, I like how Instant House Call works. It just works with the way my brain works. So, and it's very easy for my customers. You know, basically go to my website, click on a little thing, it downloads. They go, do I run or save? You know, and you say run. And they hit run and it goes in. Okay. See the little thing, it says start session, click the start session button. Boom. You know, next thing I know, I'm in. And that's basically all there is to it. So I kind of like the ease of use of that. And it seems my customers are able to get that pretty easily. So
now correct me if I'm wrong, but if I remember right, Instant House Call is the one that has the integration with D7 actually.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. So that would be pretty slick.
Yep. So yeah, it's, you know, there's a lot of things I know, you know, Chris Carruthers, my co-host from Podnuts Computer Repair Podcast, he uses that all the time. And that's how he basically repairs computers remotely, is using Instant House Call with D7, you know, and that's his, you know, what he does. So,
yeah, I mean, going from running individual programs or downloading individual programs to a script like that is it's a game changer when you're a computer tech.
Yes.
Well, nothing like it.
Right. And I was going to say, you know, so I kind of do a hybrid approach. I pretty much don't like to leave my office, which is in my house. But when I do have to go on site, because sometimes, you know, for whatever reason, you've got to go on site, you know, help these people out. And so I'll go out and, you know, I charge whatever my hourly rate, you know, plus travel time and all that kind of stuff. And then what that does is that gives them 1 hour on site. So I generally don't spend, unless it's the business that absolutely wants me to stay there, I don't spend more than an hour. I go in, I'll assess the problem. Maybe I'll get it back to a point of where we can get it, you know, hooked back up to the internet. Things are running fairly smoothly. I can download my, you know, Instant House Call. And then I'll tell the customer, I said, okay, I'm going to go back and I'm going to finish up on this and I'll give you a call when I'm done. You know, don't mess with the computer right now. We're not done. And so a lot of times that will save, you know, I don't have to sit around and they're not sitting over my shoulder. And then I'm able to go back at my leisure and basically, you know, fix that stuff up. And, you know, everybody's happy. And
sure, you know, that would work out nice.
That's a nice little hybrid approach. Again, to be honest, I would rather people just bring it to me or just do it remotely from the start. But
the worst possible thing is when customers want to stand over your shoulder.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it, you know, it's not always that they mean they mean anything by it. It's just that they're sitting there. A lot of times I think it's really out of curiosity. What is this person doing? You know, a lot of them, from what my understanding is, they really don't understand what you're doing, you know, but they're still curious nonetheless.
Right.
I'm like, hey, you know, hey, fix it. You know, and I've had people from, you know, Acronis or whatever, log into my system and try to fix some of their stuff. And, you know, of course I sit there watching what they're doing. You know, so I kind of get it. Of course, you know, I don't really want any of my stuff messed with, but, that's just a personal thing. So anyways, so yeah, so back to, so you, I mean, you pretty much, now I can see why you say you're going to pick basically the things that are going to make you, you know, a decent amount of money for the time spent, because, you know, really, if you're talking about building computers, let's say, you know, to build your own, to build a customer computer, you're talking about a couple hours of time. You know, even if it takes you an hour to physically put it together, you know, throw in the operating system, get that started, doing the updates and all that kind of stuff, you're still talking a lot of time on that one machine, especially while you're building it, versus the amount of money that you're going to get, you know, time spent. So, you know, I can definitely see why you would make that.
The other issue I was running into is if that comes back for warranty, it's a pain to try to get Seagate to warranty their drive, or, you know, whoever you bought the video card, you know, all these individual companies. Whereas if you have a Dell that you sell and it comes back for warranty, you call Dell and they send you the part.
That's so a good point.
A little bit easier there. You got to look towards the future.
Right. And, you know, for the vast majority, I think that, you know, your Dells, HPs, Lenovo's, whatever, are going to be, you know, fine for 99% of the people. There's only this small percentage that are going to need anything, you know, higher end than that, whether playing video games, which a lot of those are building their own anyway, or they're, you know, using some sort of stock program that needs some heavy, you know, GPU and CPU power.
That's what I was going to say, day traders.
Yep. Oh, it's terrible. It's, I cannot believe how poorly written those pieces of software are, but they are. Especially when they allow the customer to basically put in their own code for, you know, doing certain types of automated things. It brings those systems to a halt. It's all very cool. All right. So, yeah, I mean, you started off young in this business and then just kind of sounds like you had a knack for it. And did you ever go out and work for yourself? I mean, or work for somebody else and decide, I'm going to go into computer repair, or did you just kind of go into computer repair for it right from the beginning?
So when I was 18, I interned for Cargill, which is a corn processing plant.
Okay.
In the information technology department. And I ended up going to college here in town for, microcomputer specialist, I think is what the major was.
Okay.
And, you know, I just wasn't getting anything out of it. So I honestly dropped out, and that's when I started my store.
Okay. No, fair enough.
The teachers didn't know as much as I had hoped they would.
Right. I can see that. You know, a lot of times, you know, we get out here and we learn how to do things. And, you know, if you go back to a classroom, it's like, you're not really learning. You're learning some concepts and different things that people can do, but you're not really learning real world activity.
Right. The knowledge you learn from working in a shop is unlike anything you can ever go get a degree for.
Yes.
And the only thing that's even close would maybe be like an A+ certification, but that's so outdated that it doesn't even hardly apply anymore.
Yeah, I haven't looked at it in years, but I know that they're constantly, you've got to redo your A+ certifications, I think, every 3 years now, unless you were grandfathered in on the old ones.
And I haven't looked at it in a while, but
yeah,
last time I was doing it, it was very outdated.
Yeah. So I think they're trying to keep up with some of the times on some of that stuff. But yeah, again, there's a lot of things that we do, and I think the number one thing is that you have to be a good troubleshooter. Now, with that, now do you take apart like laptops and stuff like that? Do you do hardware repairs on laptops and things?
I do.
Okay.
Yes. And like you said, though, that's a very good point, is I'd say 90% of our job is just finding out what's wrong.
Right.
So being a good diagnostician, maybe?
Is that a word? That's sounds a word good to I'm me.
That's 90% of this job.
Yeah.
Yep. Is once you know what's wrong, it's easy to replace it.
Right.
And yes, I do work on laptops and stuff. I limit myself at, I do not work on tablets. I do not work on cell phones. I did an iPod Touch about 3 years ago. It was an earlier generation one. And I did that one and I said, I'm never doing this again.
Yeah. It definitely takes a special person to do that. You've got to have the patience. It almost seems like some of those things you really can't charge a whole lot of money to do. And I understand that once you get good at something, it's like, you know, taking apart a laptop or whatever, you know, you're going to have less time involved, but it's just, there seems to be a steep learning curve there somewhat.
Right. And when you can buy a new one for $100, $200,
right,
it's hard to put too much time into it.
Well, you know, that's a good point. I had a lady call me up. She had a Kindle Fire, and she wanted the power jack replaced because it was no longer charging. And I said, you know, that sounds like a Gen 1. I said, you know, how old is it? And she was like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years or something like that. And I'm like, yeah, that's a Gen 1. I said, listen, you know, I went on Amazon for it. I was like, listen, it's going to cost you $125 for me to replace that. I said, you can go on Amazon right now and get a brand new one for $99.
Right.
She's like, really? I'm like, yeah, go get a brand new one. You'll be much happier. Cause the Gen 1s were, the processor was horrible. It was terribly slow. It wasn't a great device. We had two of them and I wasn't very happy with it. So, I'm like, yeah, you need the updated stuff anyways. And it's just a lot cheaper.
Yeah. Well, you get people bringing in, you know, here a couple of years ago, they were making those little Dell Windows 8 tablets for, you know, $200.
Oh, was that the Venues or something like that?
Yep.
The
Venue 8.
Yeah.
Well, once the screen goes out on it, once you break the screen, I mean, you take it to some place to get it repaired and it's going to cost you $100.
Right.
And, you know, since you've bought it, there's new models that have come out that are, you know, $150.
Right. So, exactly. I know it's just, you know, sometimes it's that people get familiar with something and they just want it fixed. But, you know, I would rather be honest with the customer and just say, hey, here's what you can get a new one for. You know, here's the pros and cons to it. And, you know, let them make a choice.
That's probably one of the biggest things I've learned over the years is just be 100% honest with every customer. And they will see that and mm-hmm. they'll keep coming back.
Exactly. You know, I don't have to, you know, now if I'm going to spend a lot of time on doing something, you know, I want to get paid accordingly, but it's not one of those things where I need to make, you know, a quick buck off of every customer that walks through my door. That's not my intention, you know, so.
So how did you determine your rates, so to speak, when you first started? Because I know whenever I started and I know a lot of other techs, when they start, they usually undervalue themselves.
Oh, I just made it up. I think I was, so at the time, when Steve Cherubino was actually doing the show that we're doing right now, and, you know, I was watching what he was doing, in his business since like 2008, he basically, I think in Pittsburgh, he was charging like $79 flat rate for most fixes, even though he had a brick and mortar shop. So what I did was I just mimicked it and I was charging $79, you know, flat rate on most things at the time. That's kind of how I came up with that. Now I was using Google AdWords and, you know, there's a certain amount of cost for that. And what I've learned over time is that I wasn't counting everything that I was spending as a cost in my business. You know, an acquisition cost for a customer for me is like $20. And so knowing that, okay, so if I get a brand new customer and I'm charging them a flat fee, well, minus $20 off of that. And then, you know, any tools or whatever over time, you know, there's all those things in there, you know, self-employment tax that you have to pay. That's another 15%. So it eats away at it quite quickly. And what I noticed was I got down to the point where I was probably making less than minimum wage for what I was doing.
All right.
And I was just like going, I'm not going to do this thing. I can't do it anymore. And so I had to make a choice at that point. I said, okay. What am I going to do? You know, and so I raise my rates and then, you know, I still do a flat rate for most fixes. If you bring it to me, if I don't have to get out of my house, you bring it to me, drop it off. I can work on it in my leisure. It's still worth it to me to do it for a flat rate. And I charge.
The nice thing about flat rates is you're not charging them if you're learning.
True.
So that's the one thing I really like about flat rates is I can spend as much time on it as I need to make sure it's done right.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know,
it always bugs me when a customer is, you know, calling me 10 times, is it done yet? And I'll usually tell them, I can give it to you right now, but if you want it done right, you're going to have to wait a couple hours.
You know, I kind of was able to get away with that. I started using Repair Shopper for invoicing and, you know, customer management and all that. And so what I would do is, as I was working on the machine, I would put a little note in there and it sends them an email. Hey, here's what I found. Here's a diagnostic. Here's what I found. And, you know, a lot of times I'll get a response back, you know, okay, you know, or whatever, you know, one little word or whatever, doesn't matter. But at least what ended up happening was people stopped calling me. And once they had that first, you know, ticket, they could go in the system anytime and basically look in and see where their computer was at, you know, what stage it was in. So
that's pretty slick.
Yeah. It's one of the things I liked in it because, you know, again, I want to work on the machines. I don't want to really want to sit there and field calls all the time. When I don't really have to. Hey, when it's done, you know, I'll give you a call, so on and so forth. If I need anything from you, I'll give you a call, that type of thing. But that kind of helped out in that area. But I, you know, I've made my prices up and I've adjusted them over time. I finally got to a point where if I'm on site, it's a, you know, it's an hourly rate. And so you're going to get 1 hour from me for my hourly rate plus $20 trip charge. And you know, again, I don't travel any more than 6 miles. and it's 20. And if I've got to pick the computer up and actually bring it back here and work on it and then bring it back and set it up, that's another $20 on top of that. So that just seemed, you know, it seemed fair to me and it seemed fair to the customer. And I will tell you the $20 makes a lot of people actually bring their computer to me, believe it or not. So,
See, I over the last probably 5-6 years, I haven't done any advertising. I finally said, I'm just going to do the best possible job I can, and I'm going to rely on people to tell other people.
That's good.
That's worked out so far.
Now, what were you using for advertising before that?
Just, you know, paying Yellow Book.
Okay.
Far too much. And, you know, I think I did do Google AdWords and Facebook ads and stuff like that at one point, but it doesn't seem to yield as good results as I would have liked.
I would say in a smaller community like where you're at, I would say that, yeah, word of mouth is going to be much more important than, you know, any type of online advertising you can do, you know, especially in a smaller town like that. That makes perfect sense.
One thing I've noticed as the years have gone by, people are much more concerned nowadays about getting it back to them quickly than they used to.
Yes. Because people can't stand to be without their computer for a day. And I don't sweat it. I tell them right off the bat, it's going to be 24 to 48 hours minimum.
That's exactly what I tell them.
And, you know, I said, unless I come up across a huge, you know, something that I was not aware of, you know, because let's face it, customers don't always tell you the truth or not, at least not the whole truth. Was this ever dropped? No, I never dropped it. Yeah. Why is it cracked down a corner? I don't know where that came from.
Or you open it up and it's got half a cup of coffee inside of it.
Yeah. Oh, I've never spilled anything on here. No, most of the people that do spill stuff on there, they do call me and let me know that they've spilled something on there. So at least I'm aware of it. I don't think I've ever opened up one up where I was surprised, but I'm sure it happens.
Oh, yeah. I opened one up that had quite a bit of Coke in it. And I let it set it down, didn't touch it, and I called him, had him come in, and I said, look, I didn't do this. This was like this.
Right. Oh, but, and they, I'm sure they, yeah. Now, were you able to save that computer?
No. Okay. No, it would have taken a new motherboard and new, you know, screen and everything. It was completely done.
Now, you know, a lot of times I, you know, and people make the mistake, so they don't realize that when you spill a drink on your computer, that it's going to take a lot of the, you know, small little crevices and go down into the motherboard and usually ends up on the hard drive in the RAM slots and all that kind of stuff. Just the way a little river runs, you know, through all those little channels. And so what they'll try to do is they'll spill something on there. They shake it out. They might take a blow dryer to it and they're going, oh, hey, it's good. And they'll turn it on and then they'll wonder why, you know, a couple months later, if that actually did work, why all of a sudden they're having problems. And I'll get in there and I'll go, so what did you spill on here? Lemonade. Well, see this green stuff? Yeah, it's corroding all the points on the motherboard. You know, now if they had brought, now I always tell people, I said, if you spill something, shut it off, pull the battery, unplug it, bring it to me. And I said, there's a very, very good chance that we can save that computer.
Right. Once you try to turn it on, that's when it's done.
Exactly. And it's like, and people will be happy for a second when it turns on, and all of a sudden it goes, zzz, and they're like, what did you expect? You know, but they didn't think of it, I guess. I don't know.
Starting out, I definitely undervalued myself. And, you know, I think at one point I was, you know, just trying to get new clients, and I was advertising $35 cleanups, I think. And at some
we've all been there.
I finally just realized, you know, I've got to charge what I'm worth.
Right. I think a lot of times that we do undervalue ourselves. And I don't know. So what I always tell people is ask yourself a question. Call a furnace or air conditioner person out to your house and see what they charge you just to look at it. Just to look at it. You're looking at $70 to $100 just to look at it. And, you know, everybody goes, well, you got to have heat and, you know, not necessarily air, but you definitely have to have heat, especially in the wintertime. But it's a service, right? Take your car to the car mechanic, you know, and try to, you know, try to go in there and go, they post their prices right on the wall. You know, I think a lot of places right now, a lot of these certified mechanics are getting $125 an hour, you know, and, you know, hey, replacing this part is a 2-hour job, according to this book. Yeah, it's going to be 250 plus parts, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't go in there and go, well, I don't want to pay that person $125. How about I only give them, you know, $50 an hour? Well, it doesn't work like that. But for some reason, we think in this industry, and a lot of people will say, well, your furnace is worth more, your air conditioner or your car is worth more, that type of, it doesn't matter. The point is, it's service. You're giving service. You're doing something that somebody else doesn't know how to do. And that's what the person's paying you for. They're not paying you just to fix their thing. They're paying you because you know or can figure out how to fix their thing. And that's what they're interested in. They're not interested in learning themselves. So yeah, definitely, you know, we've talked about it on many, many shows, but yeah, definitely undervaluing yourself is not the place to be. Now, how did you come up with your rates where you're at right now?
Just basically we kept going until I figured out what worked.
Okay. Okay.
You know, and the problem I was running into was after you've been doing this for a couple of years, if you're charging an hourly rate, you'll start making less and less the better you get at stuff.
Right.
I mean, if you're charging a true hourly rate, because, you know, the first time you get rid of a virus, it may take you 3 hours.
Right.
But, you know, the second time it may only take you 2 hours.
Right.
Well, then you're selling yourself short, losing that hour. I mean, same thing with, like, you know, replacing a power supply. I don't know how long it used to take me, but I know now I can get a power supply replaced in a desktop in about, you know, 10, 15 minutes.
Right.
So if you charge a flat rate, like this is how much I charge to replace a power supply, it makes the customer happier because you're able to tell them before they leave your store, this is how much it's going to cost. And I always either try to hit that number or go under it. If you go under it, then they're going to love you forever.
Exactly.
if you tell them it's going to cost $80 and you give them the bill and it's $60, then they're customers for life.
Yep. No, exactly.
But flat rate on almost everything. I tell them, look, this is how much it's going to cost. That way you don't have the sticker shock. Oh, I didn't know it was going to cost $100 to get this repaired. I wouldn't have spent that if I'd have known that. I always let people know this is what it's going to cost. That way you can avoid that.
Plus the other thing too, I think with an hourly rate is one of the things I don't want to do, and because I'm in a different kind of business, but I don't really want to keep track of my time.
Exactly.
You know, okay, well, I'm not actually on keyboard right now, so I spent 15 minutes on keyboard. Now I'm off to working on another machine. To me, that's just, it's too much of a headache, in my opinion. So it's easier to charge a flat rate. Now, I don't charge the same flat rate for everything. I charge more for reinstalls, you know, more, you know, especially when you're doing it like a data backup, you know, those types of things. I mean, I've had people call me and say, hey, can you, I need to reinstall on his computer. The hard drive went and I got another hard drive and, you know, and I'm like, yeah. And they don't have, obviously they don't have any backup software. So, you know, I've got that stuff. I said, well, yeah, we can use the license on the bottom. You know, they want to pay you $25. We're like, hey, don't you only just have to put a disk in? You know, and my response to that is, well, I said, there's a lot more to it than that. I mean, you're talking about updating the operating system, making sure that everything's working correctly, getting all the drivers, you know, all these different things. I said, but you know what? You sound like a really smart guy. And I said, if you can get a copy of Windows 7 from your buddy, I would probably just do that and just go ahead and put the disk in and you just, you know, you just make it work. And I that would be a cheaper option for you. Oh, okay. Yeah,
you could foresee the future that that was going to be a problem customer.
Exactly. So I didn't, you know, that's the thing. I don't care. You know, it's like, if you want my help, I'm here to help you. You're going to pay me accordingly. If you don't want my help and you just want a cheap deal, I'm not your guy. Go find somebody else. There's millions of us, you know.
Exactly. I mean, like I said, I'd say at least half of my clientele is elderly people.
Okay.
And I always tell them, you got any problems, just give me a call. I'm a phone call away. I'm here every day. Just give me a call.
Right.
And they do. And they're always, you know, and what seems like a huge deal to them is, you know, it takes me 30 seconds. You know, their homepage got changed.
Right.
And they can't figure out how to change their homepage back. And I'll log onto the computer and I'll change it for them quick. And that means the world to them. But, it, you know, it's nothing for us.
Right.
But there again, their customers for life, and they're going to tell all their friends, well, I was so amazing and I changed their whole page.
And it's amazing because with the remote support software anymore, I mean, it's, you know, a lot of these things, as long as their system is running, you know, fairly well and their, you know, internet's up and running, you can log in, make that change for them and go on about your business. And they're very, very happy. And it's like, I get tips and different things from people all the time. As a matter of fact, even with the rates I do charge right now, within the past couple of weeks, I've been getting people who are saying, is that it? Is that all you're charging me? And I'm just like going, okay. We might have to revisit some things. Because I do spend, you know, again, I spend a lot of time on the machines to make sure they're right. And it's not always the same type of problems. You have different types of problems that come in. And a lot of times you've got people that don't even know all the different problems that are involved in, you know, whatever they try to do themselves or whatever they're trying to do with their, you know, specific machine, getting certain software working and all that kind of stuff. There's all these things that you have to look at, you know, in order to get these things to run the way that you know they should run, not just getting them running, because anybody could do that, right? You want it to be able to run the way you know that computer should run so that person has a good experience on their computer.
The hard part, the other hard thing is this is always changing. It's continually changing all the time. So keeping up on everything, you know, in all the different viruses and scams that are out there, it's hard to keep up with them.
Right.
I mean, I had one the other day that, you know, it should have taken me a couple hours. And I sat with this thing the entire day running every antivirus I could think of on it, trying to get rid of what I thought was a virus. It turned out just to be a batch file in the startup.
Oh, yeah,
just didn't even think to check that.
Right. Well, and that, you know, that comes down to, so let me ask you this, you know, we've talked about these on a lot of different shows. Do you have processes for things that you do in your shop or are they all in your head?
No, I've got a very specific process. When something comes in, you know, I always tag it. First thing they do, I get their get their name and phone number, and then I tag it. I get a little sticker that is in a custom template that prints out, and it's got their name and phone number. I stick that on the bottom. It's got their name and number on it, and it's got my number on it. So in the future, they can just look at the bottom of their laptop, and they got my number.
Oh, nice.
But that way, because you get people, they want to bring in their wireless mouse and their AC adapter and everything else. And it's hard to keep everything, so I tag everything, and then I put it all in a bin, so each computer job is in its own bin, and then when it comes time to work on it, I know what goes with what. If I have to order parts for something, I stick the order receipts that, you know, that I purchased in that bin and stick it back on the to-do pile, and then Usually, I no matter what I'm doing, I'll usually kind of run at least a small cleanup on it. So I'll run through a couple scripts, you know, the maintenance and the anti-malware scripts in D7, just to kind of make sure it's good. But 9 times out of 10, it's usually my computer's running slow, and you turn it on and it's got, you know, PC super whatever on it, super optimizer.
Yeah, exactly. And, PC optimizer. That's
400
terrible.
Other programs.
Right.
And then you'll look in the add remove programs and you'll say, well, on such and such date, they downloaded Mozilla Firefox and along with these other 30 programs. So they obviously downloaded it from a bad place. So at least you can kind of tell them this is what you did. And, you know, then you run through all the scripts and get everything cleaned up. And, you know, at least kind of usually call them at least once and update them and say, you know, it's, this is what it turned out to be, and this is when it's going to be done.
You know, a lot of times, you know, you can go in the add remove programs and look and, you know, sort those, you know, programs by date and see, you know, what was installed. Yes. And a lot of times when I'll tell you, the one of the first things I normally do nowadays, and it just saves me a ton of time, if there's a good system restore on there, I just go back about a month. And I do a system restore on their machine. It gets me back to a point where whatever was really gumming up their system, that's gone. And then I can go in and finish with a regular cleanup. And it just seems to save me a ton of time. So that, I mean, that's what I've been doing. Because I just see, okay, within the past month, you've been installing this, 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 and this. And those could be causing problems. So
yes, that's a good idea, actually. I have not started doing that. It's usually whenever I have abandoned everything else that I'm looking at the system restores as a last resort to backing up and reinstalling.
Well, one of the reasons, okay, so the reason I do it first is because in my D7.2 scripts that I'm running, one of the things is, and I might have to change this, but it's,
get rid of all system restore points.
Yes, it deletes them all. So before I even do that, the first thing I want to do is that system restore, get it back to, but like I said, about a month, and then I go back in, put D7.2 in, or you know whatever, and you know,
I used
start
to
running.
Have that in my script until it was like, oh, nuts.
Right, because you know a lot of times you do want to, you know, I still think you still want a fresh start at a certain point. So I think it is good to get rid of, because a lot of those end up being corrupted or messed up. And I kind of, once I clean the system up, I want to start fresh and make a brand new restore point and then kind of go on from there. Because as I've done that in the past, if a person does ever run into a problem, they bring me the computer back. A lot of times what I do is I just go back to the system restore point. It could be like sometimes 3-4 months. I'll go back to the system restore point that I first originally created when I worked on a machine and boom. And then I do, you know, I finish with the cleanup, get whatever file that they downloaded off of there so they don't click on it again and reinfect their system. And that just seems to have, it doesn't happen a whole lot, but when it does, it makes the cleanup a lot easier.
I usually tell people the second you see extra programs popping up, just give me a call. I'll remote in and I'll remove that program before it has a chance to download 30 other programs.
But do they listen?
No, not usually. But the idea is every once in a while I'll get somebody that will say, hey, something popped up, and I'll hop on there and, you know, I'll just go to add remove programs and uninstall it and, you know, and clear out their browser and boom, it's done. But it's when they let it build and build and build and build that it's, you know, you basically have to reinstall it after a while.
Right, right. Yeah, and the other thing too is a lot of times, you know, even if you have, let's say they're using Google Chrome or something like that, and that gets infected with a piece of malware or, you know, some sort of extension that, you know, some program, you know, put it on there, you know, for finding coupons or, you know, a different browser or whatever. A lot of people, you know, even if people aren't used to using IE, a lot of times people don't realize you actually have to go in and clear out. And what I do is a hard reset on IE, because if you're still having continual problems, even after resetting like Google Chrome or Firefox, you go in and reset IE and it will take care of those problems with those other browsers. Because I still think those browsers are still using, you know, something in the basic operating system that is somewhat linked to IE. And I don't understand all the architecture behind that. I just know that that has, you know, saved me plenty of times where I go, why is this thing not going away? Whatever, you know, whatever it was.
Yeah. And the most common is the proxy settings.
Yes.
Like no matter what browser you're using, if the proxy settings are messed up in Internet Explorer, then it's going to be messed up in Firefox.
Yep.
Too.
Yep. Exactly. So very good. Well, are there any special tools or things that you use in your business that you want to talk about? Like any hardware tools that you use, or we talked about D7, and that's a great software tool.
Yeah, as far as hardware, you know, I've got the Fixit magnetic whiteboard thing. I love that thing.
Oh, that's awesome, isn't it?
And the little, you know, you were talking about it one time a couple months ago. The little shim tool that Fixit has.
Oh, the iSesimo?
Yeah.
Oh, no. It's that thing's awesome too.
You were talking about it, and I wasn't sure how you pronounced it. I was like, what, iSesimo or something? I Google searched and I found it. And I got a couple of those, and those things are actually pretty handy.
I use those things for pulling up keyboards on laptops all the time, and they work. They can get in that little slot, and I actually use a plastic one to usually push the little tabs, push them in while I put the iSesimo in there, and it just pop. Pop, pop, and boom. Next thing I know, I got the keyboard off. It is so, I don't know what I did. I didn't have that tool for years. I was using, more of your standard hard ones that weren't as flexible, and you still had to be careful because you could still, you know, kind of get in there and scratch the plastic a little bit. But
yeah,
not with that other one, man. It works awesome.
Yeah. And then, you know, I've got the, at least 100 of the little bitty screwdrivers and, you know, all that stuff. I got DeWalt actually makes a little 8-volt gyroscopic screwdriver that if you put a little bitty bit in it, it makes taking apart laptops super handy.
Interesting. Okay. And that's by DeWalt. Okay.
It's made by DeWalt. It's about $100.
Okay.
And it's paid for itself over and over and over again.
Nice.
It is slick.
Do me a favor. Send me a link in email later.
I will.
With that information, yeah.
Yeah, I liked it so much I bought a couple of them.
Okay.
And so I can keep different bits in each one.
There you go.
And then whenever I bought the shop behind me, I ended up turning that into just basically a workshop. So I've got just hundreds of tools in there. You know, everything. I've got a laser. So I can engrave stuff on, you know, laptop cases or whatever I want to do at the time. 3D printers and all that stuff.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I'm a tinkerer. So.
I guess so. Yeah, that's cool. Very cool. Yeah, so, I remember I bought a set of screwdrivers from Micro Center. And they're the, I can't remember the name, but they're a German company anyways. But they're still, as far as laptops, as far as taking them apart, they're still my favorite screwdriver set for, they work. I can, there's like six of them, and they're all the different bits and stuff. And they kind of spin in your hand, you keep enough pressure on them. The ends are still like brand new after turning screw after screw after screw for the last, 5 years.
It's funny how you can get attached to a screwdriver like that, but I know exactly what you mean. There was a time where I bought a 98-cent Phillips and straight blade screwdriver from Menards, and I liked it so much, I actually went back and bought every single one they had because it was just, that was my favorite screwdriver. Yeah. I love that screwdriver.
Exactly. Yeah, when it fits in your hand and it just does the job every time. I mean, I've even pulled, people have stripped screws out, and I've used them, getting enough pressure on there or whatever. To actually, pull a screw out that they stripped, or it's amazing what people do. Oh, gosh.
And then, you've got to have a hard drive toaster.
Yes.
I've got my favorite hard drive toaster, and, a really good addition to the hard drive toaster is to get SATA extension cables, because then you don't have to take the hard drives out of the caddies.
Oh, that's a great tip. Okay.
So you go on Amazon, and for like $3 or $4, you can get a 20-inch SATA extension. It's got the power and the SATA in it. You plug it into your toaster, and then if you've got, like, I've had some desktops where it's a pain to get the hard drive out.
Oh, yeah.
You can actually take the hard drive, the whole tower, set it there, and just plug it in, and it's in your toaster.
That is awesome. Okay. Yeah, I definitely need to do that. You said you can find those on Amazon?
Yeah.
Okay. Very, I never even thought about that, but you're right. The connectors inside, they don't care. You can just plug them in and plug. Okay.
Well, that's another, I realized how much time I was spending trying to get the hard drive down to the bare hard drive so it would fit in the nice little slot.
Right.
You know, and then you'd have to take it out and put the caddy back into it.
Right.
And then put it back in the laptop. And it's just, you just got to think, how can I skip a step or save a little bit of time?
Right. Exactly. Very cool. That's a great tip. Anything else?
Not that I can think of right now.
Okay. No, it's been a great amount of information, and yeah, I've definitely learned some good things today. If people wanted to get a hold of you and you know, ask you a question or whatever, what's the best way to do that?
Probably email.
Okay.
My email is ejgarner, that's G-A-R-N-E-R, at nlucomputers.com.
Okay. Excellent. And I appreciate you coming on the show today and sharing with the audience.
I appreciate you having me.
Oh, no problem. It was fun. Like I said, I learned a lot. You guys can find me over on the Google Plus at Jeffrey Hallish or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, email me at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. You can be on the show just like Ernest was. If you want to leave a voicemail, call 1-888-697-0162. And I want to thank our sponsor, Instant House Call, for this episode of Podnuts Daily. Don't forget, if you guys need business paperwork to get you started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for the TechNibble Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. If you guys could do us a favor, leave us a rating and review over on iTunes. That'll let more people know about us. You guys can also help support the Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping in Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. My name is Jeff Hallish. I am the host of Podnuts, where Chris Carruthers and myself take live calls on the air to answer questions or to get answers from other computer repair techs every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. You can check it out over at podnuts.com/live. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.